It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the French. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com.
The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushier Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Unbelievable. It is. Well, they sure kind of went back inside real quick, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yay. Okay, let's get back inside.
Let's go back.
Welcome to All About Wine. And if you'd like to get on the program tonight and talk with us, talk with Ron, talk with our special guest tonight, do call area code 646-727-3235. The area code 646 is somewhere located in New York, I believe. And yeah. we just found that out not too long ago. So, and we're not even in New York anymore. But anyway, yeah. But we do have guests for tonight, huh?
And we aren't in New York. We're in Florida. So,
that's
yes,
right.
We do.
So,
we have a couple of guests tonight.
Absolutely.
Happy first day of summer, everyone out there.
Yeah,
that happened yesterday.
Yeah, and we're enjoying that. Definitely done. Of course, it's been summer here since November, August?
November, yes.
Yeah.
I was just going to say November myself, so I must have been right around November.
Right around November, summer started. Amazing, yeah. And we just had a few days of bad weather, and it's not looking good this weekend. But
that's okay, because nothing important is happening this weekend.
That's right. Well, it's not good for the bus people, because they still have to sit outside. There's not enough of them inside. Yeah. So we'll keep a look down on for the lightning and make sure everyone's safe during the show tonight. So we're good.
A lot of lightning. And you got to be careful with that. Yeah.
That's right. And I will go get our first guest.
All right. We'll be back here soon then. Our first guest tonight is going to be Keith Pritchard. He's from Slate Run Winery in Ohio. I know we've been talking to Pennsylvania, and we will be talking to Pennsylvania halfway through the show here. Keith's going to come on and talk to us for a while, and then halfway through the show we have other guests, William and Colleen in Pennsylvania, a winery in Pennsylvania. But we're going to start with Keith Pritchard. The reason we're getting him on, I read an article. I get a lot of emails into my email box from different wine groups and different wine blogs and things like that. Quite a few of them out there. And these wine groups, wine blogs, all that stuff, always have different comments and different things of what's going on and things that are happening, all that. And if you're interested in any of these, drop me a line. I'll give you a connection to them so you can be part of it too. But one of the things I noticed a couple of weeks ago, there was a little note on there about new agriculturals, or I say new, I find out they're not really new. It's been in effect for a couple of years, but about ag rules in Ohio that has actually changed the pace of it. And a newspaper picked up an article by Keith Pritchard that he had written to it, squawking about the fact that this is going to impact wineries adversely. It's going to cause a problem with the wineries. It's going to cause a problem with the way they're inspecting and stuff by the ag department. They're going to fall underneath a completely different category of food and drug category or something. We'll let him explain that. So I got a hold of him. He said that he is quite adamant about his opinion of all this. And I said, great, that's what we want on the program. So he has agreed to come on the program and talk with us. And so we're bringing Keith onto the show and letting him tell us about what that new rules and regulations are and what it's all about. So we'll get him on now. Hello, Keith. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for having me on this evening.
Well, I'm glad you had the time to join us. What's to begin with, before we go any further, what's the weather like there in Ohio?
I almost think I'm in Florida. It's hot.
Is it?
Yep.
Yeah. If it's going to be hot, it's a good time of year to do it, though. So, you know, it's not going to affect too much or anything.
Yes, vineyard's doing pretty good. A lot better than last year. We were wet last year. It was real bad.
Ah. We talked to Ohio a couple of weeks ago, some wineries up there and all that. But the reason I got you back on, I was explaining to the listeners, and you might have heard some of it, this new ag rule, this new regulation, you said it took effect a couple of years ago. I just found out about it from an article that I saw. You had written an article to the newspaper, and somebody posted it, and that's when I noticed it. And that's why I wanted to get...
Yes, we were trying to take care of it on the... kind of on the more quiet side, trying to be civil and other things, but find that doesn't always work very well. The people in the bureaucracy and some of the larger wineries want to keep the regulation for political positioning and possibly to suppress some of the smaller wineries off the shelves. It only applies if you distribute wine. And if you distribute wine in Ohio, you're supposedly subject to licensing and inspection by our food safety division of the Ohio Department of Agriculture as a food processing facility.
Let's back up. When did this go into effect, and why was it put into effect?
Well, they supposedly said it's been in effect all along, but they've never... I've been in business since roughly 1996, and I've never so much as been contacted by any of these people. But anyway, in 2009, there was a July... they had a budget bill, the state did, and they stuck in things in there for licensing, for fees and everything for wine... or for food processing facilities, which would include wine. And anyway, we started hearing about it in early 2010. There were wineries complaining about them coming in and wanting to license them and inspect them and telling them you've got pallets up too close to the wall and... you know, no covers on the lights, a whole bunch of host of things.
This is all under the ag rules then?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the license, you said they weren't properly licensed. What license would be required then?
Basically a license from the... food safety division as a food processing facility.
Oh.
And the fees from that go into food safety, some sort of food safety program. I have no problem with the fee or anything like that. It's not that much. But in Ohio, if you look at our food safety laws and regulations, there are no definitions for wineries or any kind of alcoholic beverages in those, and it's wide open. they can regulate however they want. They can discriminate however they want, and all that. And there's a lot of things in the food codes in Ohio that I look at as dangerous because I'm a traditional artisan style winemaker. I make wines now in more of a, you know, what I would say a European fashion,
right,
and the like. And there's a lot of things in there that's not exactly good. And there's some stuff in there I don't think they would ever go to, but under our Title 37, wood's not approved as an exemption for wood contact for wine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that we'd be wide open to, and not saying they would ever inspect you or say you can't use a barrel or anything like that, but there's other things in there. Plus, it kind of, to me, it seems like the more you're regulated, the more regulations you have, the more you're open to liability, lawsuits, all that sort of thing.
So they're basically, what they're doing then is they're picking and choosing what parts of the law they want to apply to you.
Oh, yes, yes. And they even told us they would probably discriminate a little bit or treat wineries that have been in business a long time different than newer wineries. Oh yeah, it's wild.
Then what? Wow, I can understand your issues you have with this. So then these regulations and stuff. What, they have a person that's now going out and inspecting the wineries?
Yes, it's by area. There's food. They're just basically sanitarians that are trained for food processing facilities, and they have absolutely no knowledge of alcoholic beverages whatsoever. And so they're pretty much treating you like anybody else. You know, and it's just like anything else. They just keep adding things on. It started out all, you know, you don't have any insects, you covers on your lights, and a hand-washing sink in your production area, wear hair nets when you're crushing your grapes. You know, yeah, it's crazy stuff that you really don't need in a winery. You know, those are just irritations. There's a lot more to it as far as where things can go, and it's to me it's scary. It's not scary to everybody, and a lot of the other small wineries, they don't want to make any kind of waves. They don't want them to be subject to any possible retribution in the future and that sort of thing. You know, it's,
well, you can understand that though. I mean, if they come in and say you're not wearing a hairnet, and then they come and inspect you again, say a week later, and you're not wearing a hairnet, obviously there's something written into the law that they can fine you. This could get expensive.
Yeah, it could possibly lead to things like that, yes.
Then it would seem that the law is going to change wineries as you know them in the state of Ohio.
Yes. The way I look at it is you'll get more and more wineries that will quit distributing to get away from it, to save themselves the hassle and whatever. That means they will not be distributing wine, selling to the local retail stores. And that will leave more space for the larger wineries that some of them produce grape juice. And they would still be subject to it. And we've come up against them. They have a group called Ohio Wine Growers. They have about 11 wineries. About half of them, I think, produce grape juice. But anyway, they would still be subject to the regulations as far as grape juice is concerned. And they're larger wineries. They're more able to deal with regulation and the like better than a smaller winery like myself. And they would they have a lobbyist basically, and they have pretty well shut down our bill up till now. Hopefully, we're starting to make a little bit of more public announcement of what's wrong here, and hopefully we'll get things moving, and maybe after the election, possibly get our bill looked at. And everything.
Well, basically, for the next 6 months, you can forget about anything except for elections. I mean, that's
That's
sad, but you know.
It all takes time. You got to anything you do in the state, just on a state level, just doesn't take time unless there's some big accident or something like you probably heard a few months ago about the guy that let all the animals out, and they had
the whole country heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they put through a bill for dealing with those people that, you know, have the exotic animals on a fairly radical basis. You know, they changed it from one of the looser sort of regulated states that way to probably one of the tightest ones now.
And it didn't take long. Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of thing takes a real short time. But when you're a bunch of small winery businesses and you don't have a whole lot of clout one way or the other, a whole lot of money and that sort of thing, it doesn't, it takes a little longer and you have to work at it.
Well, you said that you said something. You kept mentioning distributing. Okay, let me get this straight, and correct me, please, if I'm wrong. But if you're distributing, if you're selling this wine to stores and restaurants or whatever, then you have to have your distributor's license, and the laws would apply to you. But if you don't, then they don't apply to you. Is that correct?
No. It's like being charged and inspected twice for the same privilege. We have in Ohio what's called a B2A license, where the smaller wineries, whatever below 150, 250,000 gallons, whatever it is, can sell directly to a retailer or a restaurant in this state. That includes out-of-state wineries. Say a winery in Kentucky, they can sell directly to a retailer in Ohio without having to go through all this regulation. We have to deal with our food safety division of the agriculture department, and it's a lot. They're discriminating against our own businesses.
I understand that now. So I know too that we found out as we've been talking to different states that to sell to Ohio, they have to have their labels approved before they can sell to Ohio, and Ohio has to have theirs before they can sell out of state.
That's through our Division of Liquor Control. That's a completely separate entity in our state, and we are a pretty much of a control state here. Probably don't mind dealing with our Division of Liquor Control on the regulations that they have. It is a little hassle. You know, we are a control state, not quite as probably bad as maybe Pennsylvania or something like that.
Pennsylvania's horrible. We've been talking to them.
but we are a control state, and we've had some changes put in effect that make things easier to deal with. But every state has its idiosyncrasies with the liquor laws. My issue on this isn't a liquor law, really. This is a food processing law. And, some people like to describe wine as food. But when you look at wine and the process of making it, generally, when you make food, everything you put in it pretty well comes out in the product at the end. Well, with wine, you don't have that. That's why the big national thing on ingredient labeling makes absolutely no sense, because everything you add gets changed. in the process of the fermentation.
Pretty much.
Yep, there's nothing the same. So ingredient labeling for wine is pretty much of an absurd sort of issue. You know, if you use a little sorbate at the end or something like that, or sugar to sweeten it up, you could have that. But you know, all the yeast you add, the any acids, even your acid balancing structure can be completely changed during fermentation. So,
are they asking you to list all ingredients?
No, we don't here, but on a national level, there's been people calling for ingredient labeling.
Oh, I know. That's and is being battled by every one of us too. You know.
Yes, and if you follow Ohio's food law, they kind of ignore the labeling aspect for Ohio wines because it's controlled by the federal government and our state government to a lesser extent. But if you read it, you know, way our food law reads, we should be following the state's food laws for labeling too. In addition, which would be a nightmare if somebody ever tried to force that issue. I mean, you know, for ingredients and that sort of thing.
Well, it sounds like they're just picking and choosing what part of this they want to follow. Then.
Oh yes, yeah. They're primarily sticking with what you call good manufacturing practices. I had one of the sanitarians come at me with the guise of doing an FDA inspection because they have our Ohio Department of Agriculture does contracts with the FDA to do some inspections, and I just told him he couldn't come in, you know, and he called in and everything, and they kind of backed down because I don't distribute. Maybe I'm not subject to that either, but I called back and found out that they are for the FDA inspection, they're using their same good manufacturing practices, and I commented that you know, about 75% of those good manufacturing practices probably shouldn't or wouldn't apply to a winery or make any sense applying to a winery, and the guy kind of more or less agreed. But you know, you're just doing his job, you know. They'll just do their job and put you out of business eventually. If you give them a chance.
Government jobs, their main purpose of government jobs, and I've said this over and over, is to keep their job. That's the number one duty of government jobs.
Yeah, and that's part of this, you know. They put a lot of Apple processors and everybody else out of business in this state.
Have they?
Job, so I could give example of that. I make an apple wine and buy juice from a guy that has a orchard and presses out. And he's, you know, his comment to me was, every time they come in, they want something more, and they say their automatic response will only take 5 minutes. Well, he said he's being 5 minutes out of the day.
Well, what is being done? You said that you are pursuing this on the legislative level. What is being done? Who is getting together, and what are you trying to do?
Okay, we have a Senate bill, and we had one in the previous session, and we have one in this session, which ends at the end of this year. So it's been good 2 years now, and it's our Ohio Senate Bill 91, and it basically exempts wineries and wholesale distributors. Now, the wholesale distributors, they, you know, they're dealing with product that's packaged, not even produced, and they're
right. Yeah.
Supposedly subject to the licensing and inspection also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, they're distributing a food product. They're distributed. They're licensed and regulated as food warehouse.
So everything should, you know, wow. Does this apply to spirits? I mean, any vodkas or anything else that's being made there in Ohio?
Technically, in the past, Ohio had their own spirits warehouses, but they're in the process of kind of privatizing. Technically, it should apply to the state's own liquor warehouses if they still have them.
Right. But again, we've said over and over,
you know,
picking
so they do have one department trying to regulate another one, technically, but yeah, the chances are pretty slim that they'll do that.
Well, again, they're picking and choosing.
Yep. Oh, there's lots of picking and choosing. It's the old saying, they're picking the winners and the losers. And on our last meeting, we had it down at the Senate building. The big wineries had a lobbyist, and we had a lobbyist from the beer and wine wholesalers there. And he kind of changed his tune. I think the large wineries kind of told him, you know, we distribute through your people that belong to the beer and wine wholesalers. We distribute through them, you know, and these smaller wineries, you know, they're probably taking up shelf space that your constituents that you represent are
not getting.
Yeah, not getting. So they kind of changed their tune because we originally added them to the bill. But then when you get the lobbyists together, you know what happens.
Oh, yeah. You have how many? What does your group consist of?
There's probably about 3 to 5 of us that have been working on doing this. Most of the wineries, we all have their kind of moral support, silent support. And I've had a number of them tell me, I've called and talked to my senator or this or that, but please don't let my name get out.
just a troublemaker, Keith. You know that? You are just a troublemaker.
I quit distributing. I gave up 17% of my business to fight this. I'm kind of old school, and I used to make wine on the order of described for like Davis, California or Cornell, but right. I've kind of changed my tune and I'm going more towards the traditional end of making wines, more artisan oriented rather than production process. So, and the larger wineries, you know, if they make wine in a production process like a food, you know, it probably doesn't make much difference to them.
That's true. That's true. Will it affect you? I mean, will the law affect you since you're going into a different style there, into the artisan style?
I think it could. There's a lot of stuff in there. You know, I believe in not having a let's look at this way. I don't keep things squeaky clean like I used to. the object is, like Brettanomyces infections in a wine.
Right, Brett. Yeah.
Well, the latest theories going around about that is because it kind of works like a hospital disease.
Right.
You've cleaned the hospital of all the other microbes or whatever, microbial population. And those before were kind of in competition in the environment with the hospital disease, or in this case, the Brett.
Right.
So you have Brett there, and it's among a whole bunch of other stuff that most of them don't make any difference to winemaking. Then they're kept in check, but if you clean up so well and about the only thing living through it's Brett, guess what?
You're going to have Brett.
Brett going wild. So that's kind of where I'm coming from on that sort of thing. You know, trying to keep and my feeling is when you have a fermentation, the more different types of microbial population you have in your environment, will make a more complex wine.
Long as it's good stuff. Long as it's not bread or stuff like that.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. That. Yeah. But My thinking is Brett happens when you're trying to make your place like into a food production facility.
And you need to stop that.
that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, a little bit of the bacteria is a good thing to have around there, so you're not letting something else that's bad take over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not into totally natural fermentations. I do inoculate and the like, but there's a lot of wineries out west, say in California, that they do everything with natural, whatever's in the winery environment, and usually it comes from the winery environment, not from the vineyard, like people kind of think.
Oh yeah, it's usually in the winery. Yeah.
Right.
That's a lot of people I've talked to are always, clean, clean, clean. Just be sure it isn't in the winery.
Yeah.
Well, Keith, thank you for your information on this. Best of luck to you on doing this. I'm glad you had an opportunity to talk to. I'll tell you what,
we do have a new website, freethewineries.com.
Freethewineries.com.
Freethewineries.com. And also on Facebook, Free the Wineries, /facebook.com/freethewineries.
W-I-N-E-R-I-E-S.
That's it. And if people want to look at that, it's got a little more detail and some letters to the editors and things like that we've put in there.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck to you. If anyone wants to get a hold of you, they can just go to the website or these Free the Wineries. Or on Facebook, and they can contact you through that way?
They could contact me through Facebook or info@slaterunwine.com.
That's S-L-A-T-E-R-U-N, Slate Run.
Slate, wine. S-L-A-T-E-R-U-N, wine.com, yes.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you for taking your time out and joining us tonight. I hope you get something done about this. Best of luck to you. I'll check out your site here. I'll continue to promote this. In fact, I'll put your Facebook, All About Wine BTR has a Facebook page, and I'll put yours on there as a link. So if anybody wants to go through that, they can always do that too.
Very good. And, thank you.
Well, we're all small wineries. We need help. So best of luck to you. And if things progress or something, drop me an email and we'll get you back on and let you tell people how things are going.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ron.
You're quite welcome, Ethan. Good luck to you.
Good evening.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, very, very good. I was looking at a couple of – there was an article on I forget what the website was. It was the New Democrat or the Democrat something news organization. I guess it covers Ohio news. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how the fees are based on the size of the winery. And, you start out small and you have this dream of growing big, but then all of a sudden the bigger you get, it's just the atmosphere for wineries, the business atmosphere is just really poor there. Because if they're going to base it on your growth or on your size and you decide you want to grow, that's going to prohibit you from it. Unless you're making a killing, but there's enough already to get one started and to keep it going. And then all of a sudden this just adds to it. It's almost like saying, don't grow. And it's just a bad climate up there for the winery business. It's just, It's sad. it's like
rules and regulations going on and being tacked onto. The thing is, Ohio already has like 130 wineries. And like he said, there's, what did he say, 6 or 7 big ones? So you're looking at 125 big or small wineries in the state of Ohio that's being affected by this law here. And that's.
Yeah. That's not right.
Yeah, it isn't. And food. We know how food is regulated. I mean, if anybody's ever seen any pictures or any, you can walk into your local butcher shop or your local grocery store that has a meat department, and the white gowns and the hats and everything that they have to wear just on that level.
Yeah,
and then trying to apply that into a winery is. Yeah,
Silly is really what it is.
And even with all that on the actual food producers, like you said, the meat packing or whatever producers and everything, there's still issues with it. So all this that they are doing for them, you know, there's still things that are happening out there that are getting passed, I guess. And I don't know. This is just you know, one thing that they're trying to do to get milk more money out of the small businesses and everything. It's not right.
And the states are hurting for money, and so the legislature set up there, and this goes to every state. I don't care what state mm-hmm. this is. I mean, we're talking to Ohio right now, but this is every state. They're trying to get all the money they can from other sources.
Right.
And like he said, this law was in effect in the late 90s, and they just started to enforce it because money is tight now. It wasn't.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Somebody screwed up, and now they're hitting the small businesses to make up for it.
And that's – he's not – like I told him, Keith, you're a troublemaker. So, well, good luck to him. That was an interesting little conversation.
All right. I'll be right back.
We've got our next guest. I'll let you go get them, and we'll – our next guest here is we're going back to Pennsylvania. We were in Pennsylvania the last 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, a long time here. We've talked to a lot of Pennsylvania wineries. We have someone in Pennsylvania that's been doing real well about keeping us up to date and hooking up people for us and all that. And because of that, it's been really interesting. I can't say that it hasn't. We've had a great time. It's been a lot of fun talking to all these different people in Pennsylvania. And we've got another one this evening. Bill and Karina from Buddy Boy Winery in Pennsylvania. And they, when I was introduced to them, I was told that Bill does an awful lot of his own stuff. He makes a lot of his own stuff and everything else. And so I am really curious to see what they have to say about it. I don't have my connection to the website isn't hooking up here. I'll have to ask them about that. But Bill and Karina from Buddy Boy Winery is going to join us here in a few minutes. And we'll see if we can find out. I'm not sure which one it is either. I don't know if it's Bill or Karina. I mean, I've been corresponding through emails, and the last person I heard from was Karina. And I'm not sure if it's her or Bill that will be on tonight. I can't get into their website, though. I don't know if it's buddyboywinery.com or what, but it's not hooking up to their website for me for some strange reason. I'll have to ask them about it. No answer. Maybe we won't be talking to them. We'll try again here. We'll see if we can't get a hold of them. Mike's having problems getting through to them. The number that they gave us is the only one that we have, so we'll see what it says and what we know. If not, I've got other things I can talk to you about. I've got a few things I'm going to cover anyway, so if we can't get a hold of them, maybe we won't do Pennsylvania again tonight. Maybe we'll talk about other stuff, and we'll get them on next week, which is cool. I mean, we can... No problem with that. But we'll see what happens here in a couple minutes. If Mike can't get through to him, then we've got other subjects we can always cover, because we all know that there is a lot of stuff about wine to talk about. I was going to give him the number again. I started typing the wrong one. We'll see what happens here. And like I say, if not, then we'll have something to talk about. We can talk about rosés. I just got through reading some stuff about rosés.
Buddy Boy Wineries for sure. So let me see if I can't get onto the website here. For some reason, I am not able to hook up to that. Let's see. www.buddyboywinery.com. Let's see if it gives me a connection there. Nope. Connection is untrusted, so I guess that's not going to work. I don't know. No connection on the website, no connection on anything. We are having ourselves some problem here tonight trying to get a hold of them, and they just got in touch with me this afternoon and said that, no, actually it was this morning, and said that they're going to be available, but they also said that they've been busy with a lot of other projects. So, obviously we can't get a hold of them tonight. Maybe we can postpone them and get them in next week. We'll try that, and then I've got some other things to talk to you about today. And maybe I'll get a hold of Mike here. Y'all can hear my tick, tick, tick of my typing. Bill and Karina, I'll get in touch with them. Mike's going to try it one more time, and then we'll see what we can, if we can't get a hold of him, then we will. Oh, my landline is calling. Maybe they're calling in to me. Nope, they're not. It never fails. I'm still getting my message on my landline. It's not them. But I do have other stuff to talk about tonight. I'll email them again, and we'll see if we can't get them on next week. And I'll see what's going on with them. They just contacted me this morning and said that they were going to be free tonight, but they also said that they have been busy with lots of other projects and getting other stuff done and all that. And if William is the person that I was introduced to and all the stuff that he invents and all the stuff that he does, then it's probably he's quite busy doing some more stuff along that line. So we won't worry about that, and we will talk about a few other things right now. One thing I want to cover that I've been putting off and wanting to talk about for a few weeks here is wait a minute, maybe somebody's on here. No such luck.
Nope.
I'll get a hold of them this week, and we'll see if we can't get them on next week. Maybe they got tied up or something and forgot about it. No big deal. We'll get a hold of them. But like I've been talking to people while you were trying to get them, and I've been telling them I got other stuff to cover anyway here. So I will cover other stuff right now for about 15, 20 minutes here, and we'll be good. One thing, I saw an article, and I want to address this. And we did address this somewhat a few months ago when we talked to the doctor in Oregon, climatologist, and I can't think of his name right now. I want to say Steve, but
let me go through my stack of papers here.
Yeah, same thing with me. I was going through it, and I couldn't find it either. But when we talked to him, we hit lightly on this subject a little bit, and I just saw this, and I wanted to cover this. This is an article, and I think I might just read it to you because it's rather short, but it says U.S. geologists challenge minerality versus terror theory. And what's interesting about this is it's the annual meeting that was held by the Geological Society of America, held in Portland, Oregon.
And one of the geologists debunked the idea that vines absorb minerals from the soil and impart the taste of the flavor of the finished wine, resulting in the terroir or the taste of the soil. We've talked to different people about this, and different wineries have said stuff like this. I'm sure you remember, Mike, at times we've had different wineries say, oh, the soil's like this, and it imparts this flavor and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This article says the idea is romantic and highly useful commercially, but it is scientifically untenable, wrote Alex Maltman, who is a professor at the Institute of Geography and Earth Sciences at Aberystwyth University. He presented the paper at this meeting on the relationship of geology, soils, hydrology, and climate to wine. He also is writing a book on geology and wine, which he will address what he calls the misunderstandings. Wrote that while there is no question that vines absorb minerals from the soil, the amounts are far below the human taste threshold. Whatever minerality in wine is, it is not the taste of vineyard minerals. And when you taste wine, you can detect a minerality, a mineral taste. I mean, anybody who's ever tasted wines can always, you know, you pick up this mineral type thing. White wines from New Zealand, Sauvignon Blancs and stuff like that. I do. But he's saying, no, it doesn't happen. A Jonathan Swanchat, a Harvard and Yale trained geologist who consults to several wineries in Napa and Sonoma, wrote that, quote, while a direct link between appears to be largely metaphoric, there are several indirect influences that might account for the notion, such as soil temperature, drainage, and trace element chemistry. So, Southern University professor Gregory Jones was the one we talked to about this, and he pretty much, I think, he said the same thing, that the minerality and terroir is so minute in different places that it doesn't make a big difference. They go on to say here, the experiments that might unravel these links are devilishly complex and for the most part prohibitively expensive. As a result, it is likely that the connections between geology and wine will remain elusive for some time to come. In other words, you can't prove it is, can't prove it isn't. Swinechat is the co-author of the book The Winemaker's Dance, who has documented scientific differences in vineyard sites and is taking a reasoned look at the topic. His thinking is that the soil differences matter, but we know very little about why at this point. Which, yeah, again, we're back to terroir, the French terroir, how important soil is and how important the soil that the grapes are growing in will make to the final product. He's saying maybe not. I mean, but all these years that the French have been saying, yes, it has. And we've talked to wineries around the country. They've said that their soil is so important to impart what they have. They said that, you know, we've talked to wineries that say our soil is just like that they grow in Bordeaux or Burgundy or something. And so we're getting that type of it. And then when Gregory Jones is on here, he says, yeah, you know, it doesn't really make that much difference. You know, so we're, yeah. It says, the article continues on saying, admittedly, this isn't entirely new territory. A couple years ago, Patterson and scientist Harold McGee discussed the same subject matter and came to a similar conclusion. We don't taste the rocks that the vines are grown in, but we might taste what we perceive as rocks. Maltman's stance is close to what a lot of wine experts think, that mineral character can be found in wine, but wine grown in clay doesn't necessarily taste like clay. Wine grown on limestone may have unique characteristics, but it doesn't have to taste like limestone. So just the little article there that caught my eye, and it reinforces some of the stuff that Professor Gregory Jones was talking about, and he was quite adamant about some of that, and you know, how the soil is such a small aspect of it that. So I saw that, thought that was interesting. Another thing I want to talk about here quickly too is I found a little map that was really quite interesting. This was came out a number of years ago, and it still applies today. It's it just tells different regions of the world and some of the major wine, red and white, that is grown in that area, and the characteristics that that wine is going to impart. Western United States, for example, Semillon, elegant, soft, honey type flavors. Vignoy, soft perfume, peach, Pinot Noir, red wine, light taste of berries, cherries, and pepper. And Sangiovese, dark, spicy, and strawberry tart. Whereas you get to Italy, and the Sangiovese is much darker and heavier, it says here. Zinfandel, robust, fruity, and spicy. Chili, Carmenere, dark, closer to Merlot, soft flavors, though. The Uruguay, tannet wine, red wine, bold, medium, tannic. You start looking at this chart, and it almost contradicts your what we were just talking about in the soil affecting it, because you find these same wines in different areas that's going to give you different flavors and different types of wines. So I don't know, after looking at this chart and then comparing it to that article, it opened up some interesting questions. How much does the soil, and you can really tell the difference, though, if you get a wine from certain areas in the world and you get the same type of grape, it's going to give you different characteristics, but it still has to be fermented, and the winemaker is working with that. So it can affect it a little bit too. So I don't know. I just, you know, as I was reading these articles, I was getting, you know, conflicting thoughts in my head back and forth of how this is going to, you know, what's going to make a difference, what isn't going to make a difference, what's going to go on, what isn't going to go on. So anybody have any thoughts out there, you know, email us and let us know what your thoughts are. We'll bring it up. But I don't know. Gregory Jones was really quite quite adamant about the fact that the soil will make a difference, but it's really your climates and your microclimates and, you know, all that is probably going to make more of a difference than anything. In fact, we were just talking to Keith, and we asked him how the weather was, and he says, very hot. Feels like he's in Florida. He says, it's good for the grapes. Last year, they were very, very wet. And so, here, there are differences, too. So, yeah. So, I don't know. We've talked quite a bit, too, and I'm going to change the subject here. We've talked quite a bit, too, about names, sparkling wine and sherries and ports and all that. I found an article here about champagne or sparkling wine or whatever, and it was just interesting little article about champagnes or sparkling wines. And we got 7 minutes. I think I'm just going to go ahead and read this thing, because it's better than me trying to paraphrase it and end up saying the same thing that the article says. So it's not illegal for me to read the article, so I'll do that. It says, champagne is the name by which most sparkling wines are referred and is used to pretty much cover the gamut of sparkling wine. Well, champagne is sparkling wine, and it works well to have one name, except that most sparkling wine is not legally champagne. Only France, from France's Champagne region, has dibs on the name. All other sparkling wines are just and only that, sparkling wine. Sparkling wine brands. Not even the other sparkling wine producing regions of France can use the name Champagne. Other French regions refer to their bubbly as Cremant. That's spelled C-R-E-M-A-N-T. Or Vin Mousse, I think it's pronounced. V-I-N-S-M-O-U-S-S-E. U-S-S-E-U-X. Sparkling wine is produced in several other countries and called by different names, like Espumante of Portugal, Cava, C-A-V-A of Spain, and Italy's popular Spumante, also known as Asti Spumante. Sekt, S-E-K-T, is a term applied to sparkling wines from Austria and Germany. Sparkling wine and champagne is common ground. The commonality in both champagne and sparkling wine by any other name is that they have a significant amount of carbon dioxide included in its structure that causes wine to sparkle and to fizz. The wine's carbon dioxide can be the result of either natural fermentation occurring either in the bottle, as done in the process known as method champenois, or by using a tank that is designated to bear the pressures of injections of carbon dioxide, as in the process known as Charmat. Sparkling wines. Differences between processes are easily noticeable in the end products. Charmat processed sparkling wines typically have larger, shorter lasting bubbles. Method Champenois processed sparkling wines have bubbles that are integrated in the wine and are longer lasting. The Charmat method is a faster carbon dioxide inducing method, as additional time is required in the other method to clear sediment. The extra processing time creates a yeast autolysis, also known as a chemical breakdown, that subsequently adds complexity and creaminess to the sparkling wine that is missing from sparkling wines processed by the faster methods. Most people think of sparkling wine as being a white wine or a rosé wine. However, many red bubblies are also made, such as Italy's Brachetto and Australia's sparkling Shiraz. Sparkling wines tend to be sweet, with sweetness ranging from quite dry but less sweet brut to a sweeter dull variety. And the sparkling wine sweetness levels, European standards, the description, the brut nature. This is the name you see on the label. The residual sugar is from 0.1 to 0.5. Very, very light sugar. Brut, B-R-U-T, 0.5 to 1.5 residual sugar. Extra dry, you only find this in the United States, that is sweeter than brut, and that sugar level is from 1.2 to 2. Sec, S-E-C, from 1.7 to 3.5. Demi-sec, and you've probably seen those out there, that sugar level is from 3.3 to 5.0. And this is getting sweet. 3.3 to 5.0 is, if you out there have your, I was just going to think of, not muscadine. What am I looking for? Moscato, thank you. I had to ask my engineer here. Moscato. She always keeps me honest. Moscato, if you have your Moscato wines usually run about, you know, up to about three, you know, around that range. So the 3.3 to 5 on the demi-sec is pretty sweet. And then D-O-U-X is usually more than 5.0 residual sugar. Ports start running up over 5.0 residual sugar. So that just gives you an idea there. Standards exist in the European market for residual sugar requirements, but there are no strict policies established for adherence. Sparkling wine is described with the term brut is very, very dry with no hint of sweetness. Used primarily in the American market, the extra dry terminology is attributed to sparkling wine that is dry but slightly sweet, while the term sec describes sparkling wine that is dry with noticeable sweetness. The term demi-sec describes wine that is very sweet, and D'eau describes wine that is very, very sweet. To further complicate a sparkling wine's description, American producers of sparkling wine don't always conform to European standards, although they adhere to the hierarchy structure when they do. For example, brut nature in the U.S. is drier than brut, which is drier than extra dry, and so on.
A general guide to American sparkling wine is, the cheaper the sparkling wine, the sweeter it will taste. A guideline not associated with table wines. So just a basic idea. The cheaper the wine, the more residual sugar you're going to usually find in it. A sparkling wine's flavor profile is comprised of more than its sweetness or dryness. The style of sparkling wine produced varies by winemaker in terms of flavor and body. Some winemakers prefer less flavorful and more delicate styles that emphasize a wine's freshness and texture, while others may favor more yeasty, creamy, or oak flavor associated more strongly with an aged wine. Still, others may prefer a combination of styles. Sparkling white wines. An interesting note is that the majority of sparkling wines are non-vintage dated, meaning that the winemaker will blend an older wine with a new wine to attain a certain flavor profile. Non-vintage sparkling wines are immediately ready to consume and should be drunk within a year or two. Aging beyond that time does not do well with a non-vintage wines, as it will begin to spoil. It does not turn to vinegar, people. It spoils. It goes bad. Vintage dated sparkling wine can sometimes benefit from time in the bottle, but not beyond 10 years. Up to that time, aging the wine can result in a richer, fatter body with less vivacious flavors. As a rule of thumb, it is usually best to enjoy sparkling wine when it is young. While sparkling wines are usually considered an occasional extravagance, with corks popping only on the most festive and important occasions, they are really one of the most versatile wine styles when paired with food. In addition, they have lower alcohol than is found in the majority of table wines, and with modernized production techniques, sparkling wines have become more accessible and affordable. So with that in mind, we may find a reason to drink it on any occasion, or perhaps for no occasion at all, except to enjoy a sparkling wine. So just an interesting little article there on sparkling wine that I saw and I wanted to share. But that sugar levels there, that's something that you all should make a note of when you're out buying your sparkling wines. It doesn't have to be sweet. Champagne, sparkling wines do not have to be sweet to enjoy. The little bit drier styles are very, very enjoyable. So I'm done for the night. We didn't get our second guest, but
I was going to ask a newbie question. Because about when you're, and I'm not sure if I have this correct exactly, but when you're talking about a wine being sweet, the sweet, I know you have, you know, the levels and everything, but the actual sweet taste that you get, that's the bite, right?
No, that's the residual sugar. The residual sugar, the sugar levels in there.
I'm thinking like a strong flavor of it's, and it's not the wine itself. It's something in it. Maybe it's the alcohol content. Is that the, like a sweeter wine is going to have a stronger, you know, kick to it or something? Am I thinking close to that? Not really.
A sweeter wine. Well, the plantation spice. You're a fan of my plantation spice. We can talk about that.
If I wasn't working, I could drink that all day. I'm just saying.
It's like, you could even but, when you're working.
There you go. No.
My plantation spice, the residual sugar on my plantation spice is about three and a half residual sugar, right around that range. Almost every time I keep it right around that range. So it's not real sweet. It's sweet, but it's not real sweet.
Right.
When you get up above 5, 6, 7, it starts becoming pretty sweet. You can taste the sweetness over everything else. Now, it depends on the styles that the wines are made to. The sweetness could be a creamy type sweetness. It could be a lighter type sweetness. It could be a real heavy, almost oppressive type sweetness. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like sauternes. The French sauternes are very thick, sweet wines. German Eisweins are a thicker, sweet wine, almost to honey
type texture to it.
Hmm.
And so
the
sweetness is just that. It's a sweet. It's hitting the sweet glands in your mouth, and it's giving you a sweet thing. Using honey as an example of the far end of sweetness. I mean, you take a spoonful of honey and you put it in your mouth, and you just it's the sweetness almost overpowers all the other flavors. You ask somebody, describe honey, and I guarantee you sweet is going to be the first thing that's going to be used to describe it by almost everybody.
Right.
Because that's what it hits you. But there's more complex things in honey than just sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, but then you start looking at other items, and you know, you caught me. I wasn't prepared for this question, but let's see. Things like sodas.
Mm-hmm.
Certain sodas just seem so much heavier and sweeter, but their sugar levels are about the same in all of them as far as, you know, how much sugar is put into these. But some of them, it just comes out more because the other stuff doesn't balance with it. And so in wine, the sweetness can overpower. A Moscato wine, I mentioned that a little bit earlier, a Moscato wine has a nice, pretty clean sweetness to it, comparable to my plantation spice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that overpowering sweetness. Others, you can get a hint of sweetness in the taste, which brings out the complexity of the wine and other things about the wine. So it's, you know, the sweetness is, if done right, a sweet wine is really nice. It brings out other parts of the wine that's very complex. And the same thing goes with very sweet wines. Once you get past the sweetness, you can start finding a lot of complex things about it. Like the, again, I refer to the Sauternes, French Sauternes, and the German Eiswines. These are very, very sweet, but it's like honey. You taste the sweetness, but there's so many other things in it, so many other complex flavors and aromas and bouquets and everything else in that,
mm-hmm.
that the sweetness, if you look for it, it really is overall just a great wine, and that's why they are always such good wines. I mean, a German Eiswein can, you know, run you $120, $130 for a 375 milliliter. Same thing with Sauternes. Sauternes are very expensive, but they're very complex too. And, you know, you pick up a little oak, not only the sweetness, but also the Hungarian Tokay. You know, I forgot to mention that too. Again, very sweet, but another type of sweetness and very complex. So it's the other flavors and stuff in the sweet that opens it up and helps you understand the sweetness.
On the opposite end of the scale are the dry wines.
Right. Okay. Dry meaning no sweet.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. You know, so dry wines, you're not going to have any sweet. You're going to have the complex wines, and dry wines are going to give you their aromas and flavors and the depth and different things. A ride from the fact that it's not sweet, you're going to taste the dryness, but the dryness again and the tannins again aren't and shouldn't overpower, and that's what makes it so nice. This evening I'm enjoying a nice Bordeaux here. I picked up a French Bordeaux, and I'm enjoying a nice Bordeaux, and it's got a nice balance. It's just enough acid in it that it lightens up and it, you know, tingles the taste buds, but it's got enough complexity to it that it's really given some good flavors and good balance to the wine. And there's no sweetness to it. I mean, really, it's light. And a lot of people like to compare light wines with sweetness, and light is not the same as sweet. Light and heavy wines. I've been describing this to people during the tastings whenever people come in. People have problems understanding light and heavy wines. Light wine... A good way to describe this, a light and heavy wine, is think milk, whole milk, the fill in the mouth of whole milk, and skim milk, the fill in the mouth. Light and heavy wines are like, heavy wines are whole milk, and light wines are like skim milk. It's the mouth fill that you're describing in when you describe light and heavy. It's nothing to do with dry and sweet. It's the weight in the mouth, technically the weight of the wine in the mouth. And so comparing it to milk gives you a good idea. And you can even go so far as to get away from whole milk and start looking at cream, cream mm-hmm. of any type that you might add to your coffee. That's a really heavy taste. That would be a heavy type of taste on some wines. Some wines can get really heavy. You get some very heavy Cabernets and Pinot Noirs and Merlots and Zinfandels, and it just is the fill of the mouth. And so that's a good example of how that is, which has nothing to do with sweetness or dryness. It is another aspect of it.
Hmm.
So
okay. Well, I know we covered that. I don't know how many years ago, but
yeah, I think we did. We talked about it once before. It's a good review, mm-hmm. though. Thank you for bringing it up. It is a good, you know. And we were talking about the sweetness and different things. And it was a good time to revisit that. And so.
Yeah. And just to let people know, if they want to hear the interviewed call-in show that we did with Professor Gregory V. Jones of the Southern Oregon University, that was done on January the 18th of this year. So there, you can go back into the archives. It's if you go on the show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine, and you see all the shows listed there, go towards the bottom and hit that little fast forward button looking thing and go to page 3, and it's down there on page 3. So that's about when we started. We started in Oregon the new year. It was Oregon
that
wine.
That long since you've been in Oregon? January was interviewing. Wow.
January 5th we started the new 2012 with Oregon, and we had several parts of Oregon. That was there's another one. Oh, it's a replay. Okay, yeah. So the 18th, and then the replay was on the 26th.
He was fun.
They're on the archives.
We need to call him again and get him back on again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And we continued on Oregon for, when is this, till March the 1st. So
yeah.
We're going to Oregon for a long time.
Willamette Valley?
Mm-hmm.
Willamette.
That's right.
Yeah. Not Willamette, Willamette.
And we went from Oregon to Pennsylvania on March the 8th, and we're kind of in the mix there between since March the 8th through part of today. We tried to get back into Pennsylvania, but that's been a long time on Pennsylvania. That's amazing.
Yeah, we have been. We've had some good interviews coming out of Pennsylvania, though.
I've absolutely
enjoyed our stay in Pennsylvania. We've had some real good interviews. I've had some people stop by the winery over the past couple of weeks, and some have been from Pennsylvania, and they've known the wineries. They've been to the wineries we've talked to. So, that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's always cool. Okay.
So, they,
well,
great people. They're great people. Did you? And I said, yeah, they are. And we talked to them. They were really, So that was fun.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So next week we will try to get Buddy Boy Winery again.
Try. I'll email him and say, hey.
Yeah.
I tried you guys. What happened?
Yeah, tried them about 3 or 4 times, but I left a couple messages on there, and hopefully, we'll, get in contact with them.
I'll email them. Well, hopefully they'll get that and come on
absolutely.
And say, sorry, we didn't, so.
Oh, well. One of the things.
Oh,
yeah, very good. If you'd like to, we talked about the Facebook page earlier. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. That's all one word, no spaces. And be sure to like the page.
We will be putting a link to our first guest tonight on there, too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Connect with us on Facebook. Ron's always on there updating information on guests and everything, so definitely do that. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. That's BTR as in Blog Talk Radio. You can also follow the show on Twitter at allaboutwineBTR, so do that. And we have picked up quite a few on there, and I was sending tweets out while we were on the air tonight, so kind of updating there. Oh, yeah. I'm sitting there putting little notes and stuff, sending it out. And then if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, you want to be a guest on the program and you're in the wine industry or a wine enthusiast, email allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Very simple. And Ron gets those and you know, we'll respond there. So allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And let's see. I'll play the ending here in a minute. Just want to make sure there was nothing else. Blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Nothing happening at this weekend, y'all. All those on the East Coast, stay cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot there. Don't get overheated.
Yeah, the Northeast, I saw this morning or yesterday that Washington, D.C. was like 100 degrees.
Yes.
It was incredible.
It's been horrible. It's been unbelievable up the East Coast. And with the humidity added into it, it adds another 10 degrees to it. It's just been
It's terrible.
Amazingly hot up the East Coast right now.
I can't imagine because our U.S. government is located in Washington, D.C. I mean, not doing much as it is anyway, but to make the weather. Did I just say that on air?
Oops. Oh, well.
Whoops. Yeah. Let that one go.
Yeah, really. And if we're not back next week, you'll know why.
You're welcome. Sorry. Oh boy, yeah, that was good. But anyway, we hope they stay comfortable up there because they are constantly hard at work, making decisions for the betterment of our country.
Of mankind. Yes. Good recovery. Yes.
Forgot what I was going to say. So I guess that.
The heat. Yeah. You know, speaking of the heat being on. Yeah.
Extra heat for that. We'll return June 28th at 7 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S. June 28th next week, next Thursday. So do join us live, and hopefully we'll talk to some of y'all, or you know, send those emails in, and we'll go from there. And love to hear from you. So I guess I'll play the ending, and
thank you all.
See y'all next time.
Good night.
Yeah, thank you, and we'll see y'all next time. Thanks.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.